This presentation is brought to you by iAwaken.org, a not-for-profit organization. We hope you enjoy the presentation. Please observe the copyright terms to which you have agreed.
Particularly Shabbos Chazon is a time when we're conscious of the absence of the Beis HaMikdash. Not only do we mourn the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash so many years ago, perhaps even more important is that we mourn the absence of it today. That's something that we tend to forget. The Yerushalmi says that any generation in which the Beis HaMikdash is not rebuilt is equally responsible for its destruction. For as soon as we would rectify that which caused its destruction, the Beis HaMikdash would be rebuilt. So there's no way that we can look back on those generations with some degree of self-esteem and self-satisfaction and look down at them and say, in their generation the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed, and why was that so, and what a terrible thing. One thing we know for sure is whatever they did incorrectly to cause that destruction is still being done today, otherwise the Beis HaMikdash would immediately be rebuilt. So the whole meaning of Tisha B'Av is not in the past tense, but on the contrary, it's in the present tense, like everything in Torah. We're not commemorating an event in history as much as trying to understand and to feel an event in the present. The event in the present that we're feeling is the non-existence of the Beis HaMikdash. That's an event. That's an experience, and a very disturbing one. So it's always important to analyze what exactly it was during those generations which caused the destruction of the temple, which must still be with us today. And we have to start with the first Beis HaMikdash, because that's where the whole thing began. Omar Rav Yehuda, Omar Rav. The Gemara in the Dodim Daf Pei Aleph of Adalef says that Rav Yehuda said in the name of Rav, Mai Dichtiv, what is it that says, Mi Ha'ish HaChochom VeYoven Ezzois? Who is a wise man who will understand this? What does it mean? What is so difficult to understand, to which Yirmiyo is referring? This is something, a question, which was referred to the Chachomim and to the prophets, and they were unable to answer it. They didn't explain it. Until the Ribbono Shel Olam himself gave the explanation, no human being was able to fathom this difficult question. What was this kasha that no human being could answer? Dichtiv Vayomer Hashem al Ozvom es Teirosi. The pasuk says there in Yirmiyahu that the terror will, that the Beis HaMikdash, the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash will be attributed to the fact that they abandoned my Torah. Asks the Gemara, Hainu loy shomu bekrili, Hainu loy holchuba. That is exactly what is meant by they did not listen to my voice, they did not go. You know, it lists a whole lot of things. One of them is Ozvom es Teirosi, they abandoned my Torah. Loy shomu bekrili, they didn't listen to my voice. Loy holchuba, they didn't go by the Torah. Asks the Gemara, that's all the same thing. The Torah is God's voice. If they abandoned the Torah, they didn't listen to his voice, and they didn't go in his ways. What does it mean by Ozvom es Teirosi? Omer Rav Yehuda, Omer Rav, says Rav Yehuda in the name of Rav, Shein Mevorchim Batoiro Tchilo. They didn't used to make the Birkas HaToiro. There's a brocha that we say, three brochas that we say in the morning, every morning, which are called the Birkas HaToiro, the brochas for the learning of Torah. Asher Bochar Avonu Mikol Avim, Asher Kedushonu B'mitzvayis Ovo Tzvitzi Vonu Lasek B'divrei Torah, V'harevno. These are brochas that we say for the learning of Torah. And these brochas they didn't say. That's why the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed. It's a very peculiar piece of Gemara on the surface. Can you imagine a generation where that's all that you can find wrong with them? That means every little detailed halacha they kept. That means they never wasted a moment of their time. They were learning Torah day and night. The only thing they omitted, three brochas in the morning they didn't say. That's the first difficulty. So is that a reason to destroy the Beis HaMikdash? Because that's all that's missing? What hope is there of ever rebuilding the Beis HaMikdash in that case? Can you imagine developing a generation that keeps every, absolutely every detail of halacha and only one little thing they're missing? And even that has to be rectified before the Beis HaMikdash can be rebuilt. And secondly, if they were keeping everything, why weren't they keeping that as well? Didn't they have a siddur? It's part of the regular davening. You don't have to be particularly clever to say the bracha in the morning. You start the davening at the beginning, and by the time you've ended, you've said the brachas. It's part of the davening. It's instituted as part of the davening. There's a run on this here. Umotsosi b'megilat sorim sh'arav Rabbeinu Yoinazah. Says the run, I found in a hidden sefer of Rabbeinu Yoinah. Dikro hachi diyek, that this is how the Gemara learns it out of the pasuk. Al shaloi birchu b'atero tchilo of the Haaretz. That the land was destroyed because they did not say the brach on the Torah. How do we know that? How do we see that in the pasuk? Be'im itzal ozvam es Torah so kepashte. Because if you're going to translate and interpret the abandonment of Torah in its simple sense, mashma, it implies, says Rabbeinu Yoinah, she'ozvu es ha-Torah v'lo ha-yoyeskin bo, that they had abandoned the Torah and they were not learning Torah. That's why the world was destroyed. That's if you learn the pasuk and translate it simply, that's what it says. V'she'nisha le'chachomim u'le'nevim. When the Chachomim and the Nevi'im were asked this question, lama lo'i pishu? Why didn't they give the answer? They go into the yeshivas are empty. They go into the shuls, nobody's learning Torah. They go into the homes, everybody's watching television, nobody's learning Torah. It's so difficult to figure out why the Beis HaMikdash is destroyed. Balodol goliyoyo, it's an obvious thing, but kalaforish and easy to explain. Elo vaday oyiskin ayuba Torah tomid. They must have been learning Torah tomid all day and all night. There must have been continuous Torah learning. Otherwise it would have been clear why the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed. And therefore the Chachomim and the Nevi'im were amazed. So why has it been destroyed? It was a shock to them. When that Beis HaMikdash was destroyed, it came as a bolt that struck them with absolute shock. Why? What's going wrong? In the generation of the Holocaust, people started asking afterwards why. And there by no means was the whole of Klal Yisrael learning Torah all the time. It was a very small section of Klal Yisrael that was learning Torah. We tend to forget that. We tend to think a little bit too nostalgically about the pre-war era, particularly in this country, because we all come from Lithuania. So we think the whole of Europe was Lithuania. It wasn't so. In Lithuania, in pre-war Lithuania, there were fewer Jews than there are in South Africa today. That Lithuania, the Lithuania of Reb Shimon Shkop and the Lithuania of the Boris Bear, that Lithuania, there were fewer Jews in the entire Lithuania than there are in South Africa today. And the rest of Europe, there were places where there was a lot of learning, there were places where there was no learning, there were places where there was a great deal of the most terrible apikrusis and agnosticism, and to realize what it was. And yet people asked why. Can you imagine in the generation of the first Beis HaMikdash, when his Rabbeinu Yoina says, for you oskin b'teira tomi, they were learning Torah continuously, and the Beis HaMikdash is destroyed and the land is taken away? They must have wondered why. And the Chachamim couldn't explain it, and the Nevi'im couldn't explain it. Nobody could explain what was wrong. Ad shepir shakadosh baruch hu, until the Ribbono shel Olam himself explained, be'atzmo, shehu yodea man kehalev, he knows from the depths of the heart, shelo ayu mevarchim b'teira tchilo, that they weren't making a bracha on the Torah. Kloima, what does that mean to say? Shelo hoiso ha-teiro chashuvo be'enehem kol kach. The Torah wasn't sufficiently important to them to make a bracha. Because they were not learning Torah lishmo for its own sake. These words of Rabbeinu Yonah here are very full and very rich, and they need careful understanding and analysis. And because of that, they used to cheapen the bracha, they used to take the bracha lightly. And that is what is meant. By loy holchul bo, they didn't go in the ways of the Torah, kolema, the kavonoso of the lishmo. They didn't follow the intentions of the Torah, and it wasn't lishmo. That's what Rabbeinu Yoinah says. Eilu divrei harav ha-chassid. What does it mean? Says Rabbeinu Yoinah, the quantity of Torah, it was enormous. Everybody was learning Talmud, all day and all night they was learning. What then? The bracha in the morning, when it used to come to the Birkat HaTorah, they used to say it. It doesn't mean that they didn't say it at all, because Rabbeinu Yoinah says that the Ribbono shel Olam, who sees right into the heart, he knew they weren't saying a bracha. Do you need to be the Rebbeinu Shel Olam to know whether somebody is saying a bracha or not? You watch him in the morning and you see whether he says a Birkat HaTorah or he doesn't. It's not difficult to tell. So it's clear from Rabbeinu, and of course they were saying the bracha. That's no question, but they were mezalzel in the bracha. They didn't say the bracha. Sometimes, you know, you see a baltokea before Tkiya Shofar, before the blowing of the Shofar on Rosh Hashanah morning. He comes and he's about to blow the Shofar and he stands and he's shaking and he's trembling and he puts his talus over his head and he says the bracha, Baruch Atah Hashem, and everybody shakes and trembles with it. There's a yiro, there's a tremendous awareness. What are we doing? Tkiya Shofar. The Birkas HaTorah, they didn't say the same way. I'm talking in the first person. And we, do we say Birkas HaTorah the same way as we say the Birkas HaShofar? Listen, Baal Tekeh gets up, everybody's quiet, and everybody listens to every word, and says Amen, and everybody's moved. It's a mitzvah in the Torah. Blowing the Shofar is a mitzvah in the Torah. Not as important a mitzvah as learning Torah. Not nearly as important a mitzvah. Yet when we make the bracha for the Shofar, everybody trembles and shakes. And when we make the bracha for Talmud Torah in the morning, we get through it as quickly as we can to get on with the davening a little bit. There's no ra'odah, there's no trembling, and there's no yira. Why is that? Says Rabbeinu Yoino, Shaloi hoso ha-Torah chashuvo be'eneihem kol kach. For the Torah was not so important to them. She'yehei roi that it was really deserving of a bracha. We didn't really believe that it was deserving of a bracha. That's what it means, because if you really believe it's deserving of a bracha, you'll say the bracha properly. For shofar, you say the bracha properly, you believe it's really deserving of a bracha. From the Torah, we don't believe that it's really deserving of a bracha. We just regard the bracha as part of the davening routine, and we just get on with it. This doesn't answer and explain the Gemara entirely. There's still a lot of difficulties. Apart from anything else, the Gemara says, as you know, Leilom yilmeid adam shalei lishmo, shemitech shalei lishmo bo lishmo. A person should always learn Torah, even if it's not lishmo, even if it's not for its own sake. So this was explained, provided it's not for negative reasons, it's for neutral reasons. You should learn. Shemitech shalei lishmo bo lishmo, for you will start off learning it for the wrong reasons. And you get into it, and you begin to develop a taste for it, and before very long you're learning it lishmo. Is that a reason to destroy the Beis HaMikdash? So they weren't learning Lishmo, says Rabbeinu Yoino. But surely that should have brought them to Lishmo afterwards? Another difficulty. There's a Gemara in Yuma that says, Mikdash Rishon Ne'emar Chorov. Why was the first Beis HaMikdash destroyed? And it doesn't give this answer. So it's a very strange answer. Yipnei Shehoyo Bohem Gilei Arayus Shvichus Domim Vavidazor. Because there was among those people at that generation the three cardinal avodas. There was improper relationships between the sexes, there was murder, and there was idolatry. Whatever that Gemara means also cannot be taken at face value. Be that as it may, number one, we see the same reasons aren't given. And number two, there's another question which Rebbe the Petterburg asks. There's a Gemara in Brochus. There's a Gemara in Soto that Torah has the power to save a person from Averis. The Gemara discusses there whether it's at all times that it can do that, or only while one's learning Torah. But certainly, that's one of the powers of Torah. It's both in Pirkei Avos also, Barasi Yetzer Hara, Barasi Torah Tavlin Lo. The Rebbeinu Shem said, I've made a Yetzer Hara, it was troubling you so much, Jared. It's true that Rebbeinu Shem gave us a Yetzer Hara, but God says, don't worry, before I gave you a Yetzer Hara, I made provision, I've given you the Torah, I've given you the medicine, I've given you a chance. So you ask Joe, what chance have we got against the Yetzer Hara? And that kind of a question shouldn't come from a chemist, because I can say to you, what chance have you got against disease? And you say, if you don't take medicine, you have no chance. If you take the medicine, there's no problem. Same here, if you don't take medicine, there's no chance against the Yetzer Hara. But Barasi Tavlin, I've created a medicine for it. The Torah is a medicine for these others. Asks a bit to the Petterburg. According to the Ran, they were learning Torah day and night. How can the Gemara say in Yuma that there were these terrible Averas? Gilei Arayos, Shvichus Domim, Aveda Zora. Why didn't the Torah they were learning save them from these Averas? How could they have come? However we're going to interpret those three Averas on its finest level and its most sophisticated level, it makes no difference. Whatever avodas they were, whatever sins and wrongs they were, how did they even come to that if they were learning Torah day and night? Surely they should have been protected by the medicinal power of Torah? So Rabbi Tzvi Teitelberger asks that question. We need to understand something in the Ran. What is the connection between making a brocha and learning the Torah lishmo, learning the Torah for its own sake? In the yeshiva world, not so many years ago, the status of a young boy was determined by his level of learning. If he was into his learning, and he was growing and developing and learning solidly and well, he had tremendous social status within the yeshiva, both among his colleagues, the boys, and among the Rosh Yeshiva. A boy who wasn't learning so well didn't have that status. And that's why in the yeshivas during those years it was never necessary to have any kind of examination system. There was an automatic, even if there wasn't lishmo, there was an automatic motivational system, even taking young boys who weren't necessarily motivated on the higher levels of lishmo. There was an internal dynamics that made it, if you wanted to be anybody, you had to be learning well. Otherwise you were just nobody. And so the natural desire to be fulfilled and to be considered by yourself and others as somebody of worth required that one did well in learning. Today there's been a subtle change. Today, you can find that the stress is a little bit more on how religious he is. So you can have a boy who's not learning very well. He doesn't understand, he can't understand the first verse. He's krum. His thinking is crooked. He can't understand the Rambam. That is very true, and he has status. And you can have a chochm. But he doesn't have a beard, he shaves. He's got no status. Who is he? What is he? What kind of beard is this? An amazing change in a very short period of time. You have... In my days in yeshiva, one started noticing the change already. On what basis did you choose a Rosh Yeshiva? On the basis of his Lamdonus, of his learning and his teaching, the quality of his shiurim, his guidance. And in every yeshiva you had the good shiurim and the weak shiurim. Usually, in fact, in the smaller yeshivas, there was only one outstanding shiur. Yeshiva usually used to give an outstanding shiur, and there were one or two other shiurim which weren't quite up to it. And I remember noticing at first and being very disturbed about it and talking to my Rosh Yeshiva about it. Because when I came to yeshiva, the measure of what shiur you were going to be, and of course there was no question that everybody strived to be in the Rosh Yeshiva shiur, because it was so outstanding. And then that's one day a boy in the yeshiva said to me, I can't learn with the Rosh Yeshiva, I want to go into one of the other shiur. I noticed there's something wrong, because this wasn't a nobody, this young man. And I said, why? What's the matter? Do you understand the shiur? He says, yes, I understand the shiur, beautiful, lovely. You sure you understand the world? He says, you know how I understand the shiurim. I said, so what's the matter? He said, I can't learn with the Rosh Yeshiva. I noticed that he scratches his hair in the shiur, scratches his head, and he doesn't go out to wash his hands. I can't learn from Rosh Yeshiva. It's not supposed to be in the shiur from other people one has to do. I can't learn with such a Rosh Yeshiva. I remember discussing that with him. What's going on? That means a total imbalance. Leaving aside the reasons why he does or why he doesn't, it makes no difference. Isn't there a certain imbalance? That means I'm prepared to devalue the shiur because in my opinion, the little boy, the Rosh Yeshiva is not firm enough. That's the weighing up. And one will get a situation already in those times, and certainly today, where the Rosh Yeshiva will come, and if his beard is long enough and his payas are long enough and he looks the part, people will sit with their eyes and mouths opening, listening to the shiur. Whether they understand or not is not important. And if a Rosh Yeshiva will come in our days, when one of the finest shiurim that we used to have in the shiur was a once a week shiur in the yeshiva that was given by a Rosh Yeshiva who didn't have a beard. One of the finest shiurim. And was respected as such. Today you would never hear such a thing. A Rosh Yeshiva trying to give a shiur and he didn't have a beard. Who would go to such a shiur? Now what does the beard have to do with the shiur? The method of weighing up, the method of evaluation is changing. Let's have a look at it in the context of Talmud Torah. Seeing Frumkeit and Talmud Torah as two separate factors, as two separate values, as two separate activities, is where the difficulty becomes evident. A person has to realize that one learns Torah not only to become a Talmid Chacham. One learns Torah not only to gather new information. That's not the mitzvah of Talmud Torah, that's another mitzvah that one has to gather the information. One learns Torah because of the effect that Torah has on the individual. Borasi Yetzer Hara, Borasi Torah Tavlin Lo. Torah is the antidote to a Yetzer Hara. So anybody who's a Talmud Chacham is really learning Torah properly. Surely he must be judged as the worthy one because he has the method at least to counteract the Yetzer Hara. Whereas the person who's not learning with that same depth and involvement in Esek HaTorah, he doesn't even have the ability to counteract the Yetzer Hara. And the Yetzer Hara we've all got. We all have that inclination. So the difference between us is only in our ability to handle that Yetzer Hara. So surely the person who's taking the medicines is at least a healthy person? No, we're not looking at it that way. We're measuring it in terms of external things. So you can see a person has a Yetzer Hara, and his learning is not that wonderful. But externally he appears to be frum. So he gets the credit. You have another person whose learning is wonderful, which means that internally he must be developing and growing. I'm talking about really wonderful learning. Not farcical learning. Really wonderful learning. You must acknowledge that the learning is straight, solid, is the result of tremendous amelos, of tremendous toil and work and sweat. Such a person has got all the medicines. So he must be growing, he must be developing, he must be handling his Yetzer Hara. So even if we're judging him on the frum level, leaving aside his learning now, surely in the long term, this is the person to be respected. Surely in the long term, this is the one who's going to be able to counteract his Yetzer Hara and be going to be able to get on top of it. Not the little guy who's frum at the moment. Who knows how he's going to handle his Yetzer Hara when it really comes to the test. When he's really got to make a sacrifice. And it's a question of his self-interest against that which the Torah considers straight. Is the Prunkite going to save him? Or is the Talmud Torah going to save him? Is that medicine which the Ribbono Shel gave us in the Mesillas Yesharim says in the fifth parak, it is the only medicine. There is no other way to counteract the Yetzer Hara. Surely the one who's taking that medicine has a chance of overcoming the Yetzer Hara, whereas the other doesn't. So surely our method of evaluating people should be on the basis of their learning as it used to be. Again, provided the learning is straight and real and solid and is expressed in their action. Come to a little later. Surely that has to be the measure of their gadlus, of their greatness, and not the externalisms. When one blows shofar, as Rabbi Ashlag said at the Shavashudas, but before a lot of the mitzvahs, we don't say these things because we regard the bracha as that, but Hasidim and others do. These little paragraphs which one finds in some of the Sidurim. I'm hereby preparing myself to fulfill the will of the Ribbono Shel Olam, and through this may the influence of the Ribbono Shel Olam come down upon me. One is experiencing, that's what one's meant to feel in the mitzvah, and meant to feel in the bracha, the connection between myself and the Ribbono Shel Olam during the time of doing the mitzvah. That's what we're meant to experience. In other words, I'm doing the mitzvah and I expect the mitzvah to change me. I don't expect to be the same person after doing the mitzvah. The mitzvah is not an accumulation of activities. The mitzvah is an exercise which is going to affect me. Big difference. If I go to the supermarket to buy my groceries, there's no change in me. There's only a change in my bank account and in my pantry. My bank account is smaller and my pantry is bigger. That's the change. But in me, there's no change. But if I go to a gym to do exercises, the change is in me. I feel more healthy. I'm stronger as a result of that. A mitzvah is not collecting groceries. A mitzvah is exercising. When the shoulder is stretched and exercising, one expects to feel that after the mitzvah. And that's why we say a bracha before we do the mitzvah. To connect that mitzvah up, this is not a collection, this is a tzivui Hashem, we are fulfilling an instruction given for us by the Ribbono Shel Olam. Now if we regard our Talmud Torah as separate from our frumkeit, that's the area of mitzvahs. Talmud Torah is the intellectual area. How seriously are we going to say the bracha for Talmud Torah? The bracha will say for Tia Shefer, we'll say the bracha for Lulav, we'll say the bracha for Halil, we'll say the Birkas Hamozim, the Birkas Hanenim, all those brachas we'll say with a lot of kavanah. But when it comes to learning, this is intellectualism, I don't need the bracha for this. That's where we have the mistake. But the learning was being separated from the frumkeit. that the mitzvah is the activity of the human being, was seen as separate from the learning. The learning was not seen as a mitzvah, just like Kriyat HaShofar is a mitzvah, and just like reading the Megillah is a mitzvah, and just like Kriyas HaTorah on Shabbos is a mitzvah, and just like any of the other mitzvahs, shaking a lulav or whatever one wants to do, just as that is a mitzvah, and the purpose of the mitzvah is to affect me, so learning is meant to affect me, and that is a mitzvah too. And therefore, whatever I'm learning, whether I'm learning a Gemara about a korban, or I'm learning a Gemara about an ox that gored a cow, or I'm learning a Gemara about Shabbos, or I'm learning a Gemara about Havelus, whatever it is, makes no difference. I'm not only learning in order to gather the knowledge, I'm learning for the effect that that learning is meant to have on me. And for that there needs to be a bracha like any other mitzvah. And that's where there was a little bit of a lack. Why didn't the Torah they were learning, after all, they were learning, day and night, why didn't that protect them against the Avedas of Gilui Arayish, which is known in Aved Zorah? So for that Reb Itzele, I haven't seen the Reb Itzele Peterburger inside, but my great uncle Reb Elia brings him. We learned it in the ladies' shul, they'll be familiar with the piece of Tanakh. The Gemara is in Brokot Tassam Arbeiz on the Beis. Vayokim, Vayokim David, Vayichrois es Knaf HaMeil Asher L'Shol Balot. Remember, Shaul was pursuing David. And there were people making mischief and talking Lashon Hara to Shaul that David wanted to kill Shaul. David wanted to prove to Shaul that he had no such desires whatever. And one of the opportunities he had to prove that point was when Shaul went into a cave in which David happened to be hiding. David crept right up to Shaul and cut off the corner of his garment. And later on, when Shaul went out, David called to him from the distance and showed him the corner of the garment and said, "Look how close I was to you. And I had a knife in my hand. How otherwise did I get this off? And I didn't touch you." And David is criticized by Chazal, and we learned that in the Lady Shir, and we've also, I think, spent a Mitzvah Shabbos Shir on exactly what was wrong. But the way the Chazal expresses it to him, anybody who cheapens clothing at the end doesn't benefit from them. David HaMelech was criticized by Chazal for treating clothing incorrectly. You want to make a point, that's fine, but you had no right to destroy a garment in the process. Shenema, it says, V'amelech David zokin bo v'yomim v'yechasu b'vgodim v'lo yechamnoi. Later on, in the beginning of Malachim, when David HaMelech is cold as an old and sickly man, he couldn't get warm, and they covered him with clothes and blankets, and it didn't help. He couldn't get warm. Well, it says that's because the clothes were unable to help him as a result of his treatment of the clothes so many years before. Explains a bit to the Peterburger, what is the principle here? What is this tit for tat? You cut the garments, the garments don't warm you. What's the one got to do with the other? Says Rabbi Tzvi Peterburger, if a human being doesn't acknowledge the essence of part of an aspect of God's creation, the Ribbono Shel Olam removes that essence from that creation for that human being. It's not that the Ribbono Shel Olam, not that David HaMelech didn't recognize clothing. Sure, he recognized clothing. That's why he only took off the corner. But he was mevazeh, it was a little bit, he shouldn't have done it, because he was treating the garments with a degree of disrespect in the eyes of Chazal. In that case, later on, David HaMelech has got garments as many as he wants. He's got blankets as many as he wants. But the essence of garments is their insulation ability, their ability to keep the body's warmth within it. That essence of the garments was removed as a result of David HaMelech's, to some degree, on his level, as much as we can understand it, lack of recognition of the essence of a beged. For if David HaMelech had fully recognized the wonders of the creation of a beged, he wouldn't have cut off the corner. Just as no matter what point one wants to try to prove, it wouldn't enter one's mind, Chas v'Sholom, to take the scissors and cut a piece of the Sefer Torah out, one would never do such a thing. So if one understands what a beged is, what a garment is, what specialness there is in that creation that the Ribbono Shel Olam gave us, we wouldn't treat our garments disrespectfully. We wouldn't cut them, we wouldn't tear them, we wouldn't leave them lying around, we would treat them as they need to be treated. Says Rabbi Tzvi Peterburger, and if one shows a lack of recognition for the essence of Torah, the Ribbono Shel Olam removes the essence of Torah for you too. The essence of Torah is tavlin loy. The essence of Torah is its protective ability against the Yetzer Hara. That's what Torah really is. That's what it does for the human being. And that's what's important about it. Not what it contributes to you, not what it gives you extraneously. The importance of learning is not that I know another Masechta of Gemara. That's relatively unimportant. It's another mitzvah that we have to know the Torah, but leaving aside that mitzvah, as far as the learning of Torah is concerned, what's important is not that I've learned another blat, that I know another piece of Gemara. What's important is, what has the learning done to me? Have I changed? Have I developed? Is it a tavlin? Am I using it against the Yetzer Hara? Is it able to protect me? Am I able to improve my quality of living as a result of that, and my standard of religious life as a result of the effect the Torah has inside on me? As we had with the example of the gymnastics. It's not what you've got extra, it's how you've changed which is important. But if you don't recognize the Torah itself is a mitzvah, with the capacity to change a human being like any other mitzvah, and even more powerfully so, and therefore you take the bracha lightly, then the Ribbono Shel Olam actually removes that power from the Torah. And you're left with a garment that is not able to keep the warmth in. You're left with a Torah that is not able to keep the Yetzer Hara out. That essence of Torah, the Ribbono Shel Olam has taken away. That's how the Bitzel Petterberg explains it. And so, before we go into the next section, you see that what we're mourning on Tisha B'Av is the extent to which we lack an appreciation of the effect Torah is meant to have on the individual. We've spoken so often about it that one can't speak enough about it, because the tendency is so much against it, one's fighting against the stream. That's how society, that's how religious society regards Torah. The measure of where you're holding is how many blats you've learned. You say to a person, what are you learning? You say, Gemara Ksubis, where are you holding? Daf Mem, hey, that's strange, but 2 weeks ago you were on Daf Mem Dal, is that all you've done? That's meant as a criticism. He's not judged, my goodness, you know, I saw you 2 weeks ago, you look a different human being today. Your davening is different. Everything you do is different. The way you give tzedakah is different. The way you relate to people is different. You've got a chesed about you, you've got a chen about you. What's happened? And he answers, interesting you should say that, I've had the 2 best weeks of learning. I've learned fantastically these last 2 weeks. Really, how much did you learn? One Tosfos. That's all I learned these 2 weeks. But look at the effect. We've lost the sensitivity to be able to judge the effect of learning, or to be able to judge the quality of learning by the effect it has on the human being. It's like going to the person that goes to the gym and not saying to him, tell me, do you feel better as a result? You've been going for 6 months. How do you feel? You don't say that. You're going to say, how many press-ups are you doing? He's not doing 25, but last week you were also doing 25. That's not really relevant. If he says, you know, I used to cough, my cough is gone. I used to have to sleep 8 hours a day, I sleep 6 hours a day now, it's a pleasure. That's how you measure whether it's a successful gymnastic program. Not onto whether he's on 25 or he's 50, that's not what's important. Again, I'm stressing, we're not talking about the mitzvah of Yediyah Satorah, which is a different mitzvah. One has to know the Torah, one has to master Torah knowledge, it's a different mitzvah. We're talking about the mitzvah for which one says the bracha, which is not the mitzvah of knowing the Torah. That's the mitzvah of learning the Torah, the life of the Divrei Torah. It's a different mitzvah altogether. And the success of the fulfillment of that mitzvah has to be measured in the person, not in the quantity. And there are people in this space of Medrash have gone through crises, that even people have left the space of Medrash because of that. Because they felt inadequate in the face of people who have done 20 pages of Gemara in the time they've done one. The effect it's had on them is not something which is necessarily appreciated by oneself and by others, because that's not how society judges. Society doesn't judge both secular and religious society. No longer does society have the sophistication and sensitivity to judge people for what they are. Society judges people for what they possess. And in the secular society, that's expressed in terms of a bank balance, and in religious society, that's expressed in terms of frumkeit and pages of Gemara. It's not expressed in terms of understanding who this human being is and where he's come from and where he's going to. And how often do I hear, and I shudder every time I hear it, one person asking to another, how many shurim are you going to? Can you imagine a less relevant question? Can you imagine a more idiotic question? What difference does it make how many shurim you're going to? Question number one is, are you learning? Good. Question number two is, are you learning to your maximum potential? And that doesn't mean quantitatively. That means, are you understanding each thing you're learning? Are you understanding to the full? Are you getting to the bottom of it as far as you're capable of getting to it? That's all that's relevant. Not how many shiurim you're going to. That's no measure at all of the success of the program. And that causes the Churban Beis HaMikdash. This preoccupation with a quantitative measure of success in the mitzvah of Talmud Torah is that which causes us to be mezalzel, to cheapen the Birkas HaTorah. Birkas HaTorah is not important. I want to go a little bit further, and some of you might find this a little bit difficult, so please try and listen carefully. It won't take us long. And if necessary, revise it, looking inside it in the materials. What Birkas HaTorah were they taking lightly? So Tosfos says, Kishehem mashkimin lilmud Torah, when they get up in the morning to learn Torah, she'en bevorchim la'asek b'divrei Torah, v'harev no v'asher brocha. They get up early in the morning, those brochas which we say every morning, those are the brochas that they were being mezalzel, they were taking lightly. That's the same with everything we've learned this far. Barosh puts it a little bit differently, and that little different alerts us to another possibility. What does he say? Lefi she'en mevorchim b'Torah chilo, La'asek b'divrei Torah, v'harev no v'asher brocha bonu. The same three brochas which Tosfos refers to. And then he does, instead of saying kishemashkimim lilmud, when they get up in the morning to learn, he says kishebo'im lilmud, when they come to learn. On the surface, that doesn't make any difference when they come to learn, when they get up in the morning to learn. But there is a difference. And the difference is expressed in the machlekes between Tosfos and Rosh and Brochus. There's a Tosfos in Brochus. That's with Aleph Amud Beis. The Tosfos asks, why do we not have to make a new Birkas HaTorah every time we learn? We make one bracha in the morning, and when we come to the shiur in the afternoon, after having been at work the whole day, we don't say a new Birkas HaTorah. Why not? Sukkahs, when you have a meal in the sukkah, when you're in and out of the sukkah, and you come to have your next meal, you make a new bracha. Surely there should be another, every time you learn, if there's been an interruption in between, you should make a new bracha. The Tosfos answers no. The Yesh Lema, the shiny Torah is different. She'eino me'ya'ish daito, because a person doesn't put it out of his mind. The chol shor odo mechuyev lilmud, because a person is obligated to learn at all times. And so since there's a chiyuv hanging over one at all times, one's at all times obligated, one's conscious and aware of that obligation, any departure from learning Torah is only temporary. And the intention is, whether conscious or subconscious, is to get back to the learning as soon as possible, and therefore it's not necessary to make a brocha. I'm not going to dwell on the Tosfos, but the Rosh puts it a little bit differently, and we'll understand the nature of the difference in a moment. And he says, Mistaber, it's logical to say, Shebnei Odom Sheregilim Tomid La'asek B'Torah. Those people who always practice as the norm, constant learning of Torah, and even when they go out to business, they rush their business to get back to learn as quickly as possible. But Tommy Datum al Limudom, and always their intention, their mind is on their learning. Therefore, while they're going out to work, it's not considered a hefsek, it's not considered an interruption, and they don't have to make a brocha when they come back. It would appear that one of the differences between the way that Rosh expresses it and the way Tosfos expresses it is a difference in halacha. Tosfos says it's because there's always a chiyuv, there's always an obligation on a human being to learn. Therefore, we assume that the human being never quite takes his mind off that obligation. So it would appear from Tosfos that all people are not obligated to say a brocha when they come back from work and they sit down and learn. That's how we paskin. We don't say a brocha, although we don't hold ourselves on levels where our mind is on Torah all the time, unfortunately. Yet, nobody paskins that when you start learning again, you've got to say a bracha again. That's based on the Tosfos. But according to the Rosh, we should. Because the Rosh says explicitly, only those people who are regilim lilmud Torah, those people who are learning all the time, day and night, and they just rush out to do a bit of business, and they come back to learn immediately. They are potter from a bracha. For them, it's not a hefsek. But an ordinary human being who just learns an hour or two a day, learns a half an hour in the morning, and another half an hour in the evening, every time he learns, he should make a bracha. And the Simcha Zichel quotes the Siddur of the Yavetz with an instruction by the Birkas HaTorah to say it every time one learns. So there's a machlokes between Tosfos and the Rosh and Brochus as to whether those people who are not really involved in Torah have to in fact say a brocha every time they come to learn or not. And so in the Gemara and the Dorim, where the Rosh says, we're not referring that at the time that the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed, at the time that the Temple was destroyed, because they took the bracha lightly. Tosfos says, which bracha? The one early in the morning. And Tosfos says, the Rosh says the bracha when they come to learn. Because the Rosh held that every time you come to learn, you have to make a bracha. And let's focus on that view for a few moments. So the Rosh, let us repeat, what does the Rosh hold? That if one is on a level where one is learning continuously, and one merely rushes out for a few moments to do a bit of one's own affairs, when one comes back, one does not have to make a new bracha for the learning of the Torah. But if one, it would appear according to the Rosh, that if one's out at work all day and one just learns a few hours a day, one does have to make a bracha every time one comes back. And the Rosh says in the Dorim that the reason the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed was because they took lightly, or they did not make that bracha, which they were supposed to make when they came back to learn every time during the day. That implies that these people spent vast amounts of time not involved in learning, which is against the Ran, against Rabbeinu Yonah. And you remember that Rabbeinu Yonah says that if it was so obvious, if they were spending vast amounts of time away from their learning, why could the Nevi'im and the Chachomim not answer the question as to why the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed? If you went into the yeshivas and they were empty, and you went into the shuls and they were empty, and you went into the homes and they weren't learning much Torah, surely it's obvious why the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed. So Rabbeinu Yonah comes to the conclusion they must have been learning quantitatively an enormous amount. They must have been learning. That's why it came as such a shock. And only the Ribbono Shel Olam, who can measure quality, was able to tell us the reason as to why all that learning didn't help. And according to the Rosh, it would appear that they were out for vast periods of time. In that case, the question of Rabbeinu Yonah comes back. If that's the bracha, if they were meant to make a bracha every time they came back to learn, that's because there's been a hefsek. Why has there been a hefsek? Because they've been out for so long with no intention of coming back. Then why was it so difficult to figure out why the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed? And here in conclusion, we come to the way that the Simchas Yisrael learns it, which I want to do inside with you, which is a little different. And it opens a new understanding of what was wrong, what was missing, and what is missing. For Hayom Nireh Al Pi Zeh, says the Reb Simchas Yisrael, would appear on the basis of this. The Misha Ein Da'ata Olo Tomid Kishiyavza Lifomim Milmud, based on Tosfos and the Rosh, that somebody who doesn't always intend to come back to learn, M'chuyav Lavoret Batoivet Chilo, he would have to make a bracha on the Torah. V'yinei Kishi Yisagti HaSidu Shemagon Yayvet Zal Matzasi Ba'alecha L'maisekeh. When I found the Sidur of the Goyim Yayvet, I found that he explicitly says that one should make the bracha every time one starts learning. And according to this, it's understood why Shaloi Birchu Da Torah Tchila. What it means is that Beis HaMikdash was destroyed because they didn't say the bracha on the Torah first. Ki kol ikar alimut. Listen carefully. For all the purpose of learning, ki kol ikar alimut. For all the purpose of learning, hainu limud lemaise. That is learning to put into practice. Which on the surface seems contrary to what we said before, that that's called shalei lishmo, it would appear. To learn just to know the dinim, that's not lishmo. Hainu behilucho ba'olam hamaise, eich la'aseis apiatoyu. That is when one operates in the day-to-day world, how to do so in accordance with the Torah. Ve'oz tomi daito alov, and then his mind is always conscious with him, and you don't have to make a bracha when you come back to learn. So Reb Simchas Yisrael is learning it a little bit differently here. He's saying, not a question of how much time you spend outside of your Beis HaMidrash. That's not what's important. What's important is the way you operate outside. When you're not learning, are you operating Alpi Torah, in which case you're constantly aware of Torah, or are you operating without awareness of Torah, in which case there's been an interruption, and when you come back to learn, your Torah hasn't been, there's been no continuity, you need to make a new bracha. And this on the surface is difficult to understand, because that means then, what does it mean they didn't make the bracha? They didn't make the bracha because when they went out from their learning and they did their day-to-day business, it was not in a Torah way. That's very serious, that means they weren't keeping halacha. And that's not what it says. Again, it would have been very easy. Why did you need the Chachomim who couldn't answer and the Nevi'im who couldn't answer? If they operated in their businesses and in their professions, Shaloi Lefi HaTorah, why was it so difficult to figure out why the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed? So we must say no. Every bit of halacha was kept. Not only the Yerachayim and the Yeradei and the Evan Ezra, but also the Chesh and Mishpat, the laws of business, everything was kept meticulously. So what does Reb Simcha Wiesel mean that they didn't operate in accordance with Torah? And here I want to explain a concept which might be difficult to fully appreciate. We're not talking about a person expressing his Torah in the actions he does. That, of course, they did. Nobody worked on Shabbos, Chas V'Sholem. Nobody lent money with interest, Chas V'Sholem. Nobody did anything that Al Pi Halacha was not allowed. So what is it? There is a difference. You watch a man in his business, standing at the counter selling his merchandise, or walking in the street, sitting in the bus. There is a difference between a man who's involved in learning Torah and one who's not involved in learning Torah. Not in what they do so much. That's one difference. But even if you're watching two people doing the identical things, and let's say their knowledge is equal, they all know, they both, these people that we're watching, know the halacha meticulously. As you understand, you walk into his shop, and there's a mezuzah on the door. And you come inside and you find he's sitting there with his yarmulke on and his everything is perfect and everything is wonderful. You ask for a cup of tea and it's Chol of Yisrael. He takes you out to lunch, it's Mahadrin. You want to do a business deal with him that involves interest, there's a Heter Iske. Both cases, everything 100% al pi halacha. The one you're talking to, a Talmid Chochem, who's involved in learning, and the other one you aren't. What is the difference? Difficult to put one's finger on it. But the one who's learning Torah is involved in learning. And again, when we talk about learning, we're not talking about that learning which is the accumulation of factual information. We're talking about esek haTorah, about deep analysis of Torah. That is a thinking person. Everything he sees and everything he hears, he analyzes. He doesn't take anything at face value. While you're talking to him, he's busy analyzing. He reads a newspaper article, he's busy analyzing. When he looks at an opportunity, a business opportunity, he's busy analyzing. Analyzing Al-Pi Torah, not just is it right or is it wrong, may I or may I not. That's the easy part. But developing that part, which one doesn't find explicit in Shulchan Aruch. But Simcha Wiesel once did something in business, Rabbi Shmuel Salanter once did something in business, and the Talmidim asked him, where does it say in Shulchan Aruch that you have to do such a thing? You weren't obligated to do that. Where does it say in Shulchan Aruch that you were obligated to do that? To which he answered, in my Shulchan Aruch it says so. You see, he said, my Shulchan Aruch is bigger than yours. There's a whole section of the Shulchan Aruch which you won't find in the pages. That comes from being involved in Torah, from thinking in Torah, from analyzing Torah, from viewing the world in a Torah-dic way. So that one has to be somebody who is currently involved in learning Torah. It's a state of being. It's not an action. It's not anything you can put your finger. It's a state of being. It's a thinking man, a man whose mind is occupied in Torah all the time, wherever he is. Such a person doesn't have to make a bracha when he opens his gemara. It doesn't make any difference where he's been or what he's been doing. He's been thinking all the time in terms of Torah. While he's been doing his work, while he's been doing his business, while he's walking in the street or driving his car, everything he sees has been Al Pi Torah. If you go to Israel today, Bnei Brak, even Yerushalayim, you'll very often see walking in the roads in the religious areas, people walking down the street like this. They don't want to waste a moment. They're learning Torah. You see, you're supposed to be learning Torah all the time. They've missed the point. Learning Torah all the time doesn't mean you have to bump into people because you're looking in a sefer and you don't know where you're going. That's not what it means. Learning Torah means that everything you see through the eyes of Torah. And you look at the world around you. You look, you notice it. You speak to people, you communicate. You notice, you're observant. And you take the world around you with all its vibrancy and with all its life, and you view it and analyze it through the eyes of Torah. That's called learning Torah all the time and not needing to make a bracha when you come back. That's what it means. And in fact, one sees that is the intention of Reb Simcha Wiesel by the opening of this very chapter. It's Perek Kuf Mem Ches. And he writes to somebody who sent him, a Talmid who sent him a letter. And Reb Simcha Wiesel's typical to the point way, and sometimes not particularly diplomatic way, because he gets to the end straight away, he's not particularly involved in diplomacy. Nikar olecho me'oid bilbul hadas. Your confusion is obvious from your letter, but bilbul hadas doesn't mean just confusion. Bilbul hadas means, I can't think of an English word that adequately describes the total confusion that is implied by the bilbul hadas. Ein ze rak Yitzibas bitulat Torah. Why are you so confused in your thinking? Says Rav Simcha, this will because you're not learning. Ki ein dover hamoyil laniach daito ki esek haTorah. There is nothing so effective in straightening out and settling a person's thoughts than learning. And the fact that your thoughts are unsettled and tumult shows that you're not learning properly. That's what it shows. That's a little bit of what we're talking about, the two different human beings. Mitzvahs is doing, halachas is keeping. You can be quite sure that the person he's writing to, whoever it was, told me the Rav Simcha Zissel, he must have been learning many hours every day. Rav Simcha Zissel is commenting on the quality of learning. There's something missing. It's not your mind is confused. You can't be learning properly. You don't have the appearance. Your letter doesn't have the appearance of somebody who's involved in Talmud Torah, somebody who's really involved in learning. That's not how you would be thinking if in fact you were. And so here we've explained the Gemara the second way, using the implication in the Rosh, that what that generation was criticized for was not that they didn't say the morning bracha. Morning bracha is part of the davening, they said that. But when they went out to business and came, they didn't say a bracha when they came back to learning. Why didn't they? Because they were only out for short moments. And as the Rosh says, you're only out for short moments and you intend to come back immediately, you don't have to say a bracha. Explains of Simcha Zissel, it's not the quantity of time that you're away from your learning. It's what were you doing during that time? Were you thinking like a Ben Torah in your secular activity? Were you applying Torah thinking and Torah analysis to your secular activity? Or were you totally involved in a secular system of thinking? And if you were totally involved in a secular system of thinking, no matter how brief the hefsek is, when you come back, you have to make a new bracha. And they didn't. That was what they missed, the understanding that their Torah thinking had to go out into the streets with them and had to be part of their everyday life. And as we said in the first part of the shir, that the absence of the Beis HaMikdash today is what we're really mourning for. Not the fact that it was destroyed, not only the fact that it was destroyed so many thousands of years ago. The fact that it's not yet rebuilt is symptomatic of the same defects in us that existed in them. If we had managed to repair those defects, the Beis HaMikdash would have been rebuilt. And on the lines the way we learned it the first time, using the Ran, Rabbeinu Yonah, the defect was one of not understanding that Torah is not to be measured quantitatively, but it's to be measured qualitatively, to be seen in terms of what it does to me, rather than in terms of how much of it I've done. It can't be measured by weights and it can't be measured by volume. It can only be measured by human values. And if you want to see how a Talmud is doing, it's irrelevant how much he's learnt. What's relevant is what he looks like, how he's changing, how he's thinking, how he speaks, how he behaves. That's where you'll see how he's learning, and that's all that's important. And that comes not through quantitative learning. The fact that one learns 25 pages of Gemara superficially is not going to change a human being at all. What's going to change a human being is applying all of his mind and all of his personality to understanding a sugya of Gemara, to understanding Rishonim, to understanding Tzak, to understanding the Torah of the Ribbono Shel Olam, and applying himself to get as deep in as he can. That's where he's going to change. And if a person has some spare time, the first thing he needs to be doing is to be checking that learning that he's already doing is being done to the maximum depth level possible. And then if he's got more time, he can carry on learning something else. And let us not think that every little bit of extra time must be devoted to learning something new and something different. And according to the way we learned in the Rosh, the way Rissel learns, exactly the opposite, the other side. Whereas in the first half of the shiur we said what's important is not the quality of the, not the quantity of the learning, but the quality of the learning. In the Simcha Zissel's way, what's important is not the quantity of the hefsek, but the quality of the hefsek. Not how much time one is not learning, but what one's doing during that time that one's not learning. Is one using one's mind like a Ben Torah, or is one using one's mind like a secular Jew? Is one a split personality that when one's learning one thinks like a Jew and when one's not learning one thinks like a non-Jew? Or has one the ability to synthesize one's life into one system of thinking and into one system of values? That's the function of the Torah. That's the purpose of the Torah. And when that is able to be achieved, the Ribbono Shel Olam will be able to bring his Shechinah back into Yerushalayim and the Mirtzei Hashem the Beis HaMikdash will be able to be rebuilt, thus turning these days of mourning into days of Sosa and the Simcha.